All right, let's head over to our Zoom line where we've got Warren Martin on with us with Kansas Strong, the Kansas Oil and Gas Resource Association. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing great. How about yourself, Jason?
You know, not too bad. We just had the Minnesota State Fair. It ended Labor Day weekend. I understand you're at the Kansas Fair. Is this the state fair in Kansas that's happening?
It's the Kansas State Fair, and here I am in my RV. Just about half a mile away from where our booth is, and we have volunteers that work our booth throughout the week. So I go back and forth between them, and then about 60% of the time I'm in the booth.
You know, it's interesting when we're talking about the energy transition, we hear a lot about electric cars. We hear some horror stories about certain counties in California already giving you campfire permits. One thing we don't talk about is how camping really does rely on propane and natural gas, let alone everything else. But that is another part of the whole camping thing I don't hear much about when we're talking about the energy transition. A lot of people like to camp, but how could they do it without their propane and natural gas?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because we actually did a video. We had a whole series of videos that we did that were life without oil is X. And so one of those videos that we did was life without oil and natural gas is life without food trucks. And so we just looked at just simple food trucks and how much oil and gas plays a part in being able to utilize food trucks around, city, estate, wherever they might be. And it's amazing to me because a lot of people that are very much on the green agenda side of things, they don't understand. They also love food trucks, and they don't understand that when you go and you go to that food truck, you're depending completely upon oil and natural gas. Everything in that food truck is powered by oil and natural gas. We're here at the state fair. I'm in my RV. I got my propane cylinders out front that keep my heater going, that keep my water warm, that run my stove here in my RV. But if you step out of here and you walk around the state fair, you can throw a rock and hit a generator somewhere that's running off oil and gas to power all of these booths, all of these food stands and other things that we love at the state fair. The reason is because oil and natural gas is the densest, most transportable, usable form of energy on Earth. It's the only source of energy you can put in a bottle and you can take it anywhere you want and turn it on at any point and immediately have energy. And there's no other energy source out there that replicates that.
We did a story on the food truck from an oil and gas perspective on the crude life several months ago, and it wasn't hard to write. It was not hard to write. I mean, from the transportation of getting there to the powering to all the different items, you know, the styrofoam containers that people use to, I mean, there's so many elements that come with it that it's a shame that gets left out of the conversation so easily with the media. And, you know, one thing that we try to do and you try to do is we try to educate the public on the different, I guess, pitfalls and the different items that people tend to leave out in the media. My understanding is that you did a media interview earlier with a big time radio station out of Kansas. Give us a little bit of a recap on that.
Yeah, so it was a meeting with a big talker, and we were talking about the oil and gas industry, our presence here at the state fair, and really, why are we here? What is the purpose of Kansas Strong being at the state fair? And the answer is really simple. Most people need to know more about the oil and gas industry. It's something they depend on every day. It's something they utilize every day. It's something that they wear every day. It's something that they, all of the equipment and supplies and stuff that they depend upon. You talk about the styrofoam and the food truck. If you go back to COVID, when we had the shutdown in COVID, if you look at all the procedures that were put in place to try and sanitize our public during that period of time, they were all dependent upon the oil and gas industry. You look at the N95 mask, every part of it except for the metal piece that goes over your nose, it's made by petroleum. You look at the individual containers, the individual packaging, and all those things go into food trucks. They go into anywhere where you're transporting food sources across lines or transporting anything that could be contaminated from one hand to the next. And so It's a vital part of our society. It's a vital part of where we're at. And that's why we're here at the state fair. And that's what we were talking about with the radio station this morning is we're here to address the public. We're here. People come by our booth for the next 10 days. They'll be coming by our booth. I stay here in an RV because we have volunteers that work in the booth, and I regularly get calls where they call up and they say, hey, we've got someone here that has a question and we can't answer it. Can you come talk to them? And so our goal is to help people understand what we do, how we do it, why it's important to them, and why it matters to the world. And education is really a key to people having a better understanding of the oil and gas industry and also having a better understanding about our energy future. Because it's not just about, am I going to get my source from a windmill or am I going to get my source from oil and gas? It's much more complicated than that. From the standpoint of scalability and what you can scale up, and also product development and what products you're able to create utilizing those different energy sources.
There are some studies that say that 95% of what we use on a daily basis, somewhere along the line, touches fossil fuels, traditional energy sources, from the toothbrush to the toothpaste to the bathroom lights, et cetera, et cetera. When I think about just the basics, you know, you go to any town USA, and I've read studies where 60 to 70% of the grid of the city is emergency services. That's hospitals, that's fire departments, that's police. When you think about the sheer just basics of a civilization, where did we go wrong? Where was the disconnect? Because the last 10 to 15 years, the oil and gas industry, we went from Giant and Dallas and the Beverly Hillbillies to where the rags to riches in the oil and gas industry was truly celebrated in popular culture, in the classroom, in the boardroom. Now there are oil and gas executives no longer using the word oil and gas. They will scold you. No, we're energy now. You will have emergency services that rely on oil and gas, be the first ones to talk about a green revolution. And I'm not asking this to point fingers. I'm just asking this because where did we go wrong? There was a time when, you know, James Dean, it was cool to be part of oil and gas. Beverly Hillbillies, I mean, it was a neat thing. And now it just seems like we're in a point to where if you say you're part of the oil and gas industry, you almost get looked at like you're part of the cigarette industry.
Yeah. And I think where we went wrong is we went wrong when, if you look at the history of PR when it comes to oil and gas, for a large portion from the early 1900s all the way up until the 1990s, even into the 2000s, if you look at oil and gas promotion, oil and gas publicity, oil and gas talking points, we were silent. Our industry was silent. We understood, and it's still true today, but we understood back then that you could not survive without us. You had to have oil and gas to be able to function in this world. You had to have it. There was no other choice. So when environmentalists really began to attack the oil and gas industry, come after the oil and gas industry on a repeated basis, the oil and gas industry's response was silence. You can't live without us. We don't have to respond. And that was our response. And because of that, it turned from a practical market solution to providing energy, providing products and those types of things to a political issue, which is clouded by everything except science. And so when it became a political issue, then anything that comes a political issue, you always have two sides here in the United States. And it's pretty evenly divided, 50-50. And the media has its preference on which side of that they're going to fall on and support. And so there was a huge groundswell that started in the 60s, grew in the 70s, really took off in the 80s and 90s against the oil and gas industry. The oil and gas industry remained silent. And now we're finally starting to speak out. And a lot of times not in real positive ways. Like you said, a lot of companies have changed from oil and gas to just energy. A lot of larger oil and gas companies have really put forward the green energy policies that they're implementing in their companies. But really, none of that has anything to do with what the average person has to utilize on a day-by-day process, helping them understand this is what you're using, this is how you're using it, this is what you're dependent upon, this is where it comes from. Those things are what we need to educate the public on so that they have a better understanding of where their energy, where their products, and everything comes from. You threw out that quote a while ago that 95% of everything we come in contact had something to do with oil and gas. I'm surprised it's that low. I would be surprised if it wasn't higher than that. I challenge a lot of times. I'll go into schools, and sometimes the principal will want to sit down with me, and the principal will say, is it really necessary for you to come in and talk to our kids about oil and natural gas? And I'll sit in that principal's office, and I'll ask the principal, I'll say, if you can find one thing in this office that is not made utilizing oil and natural gas, I'll agree with you. I do not need to come into your classroom. And they'll look around the room and they'll try and find different things. I've yet to have a principal find something that did not, that I could not tie back to oil and gas in some way. Most of the time, what they finally end up pulling up is they'll pull up a blank sheet of paper and they'll hold up that blank sheet of paper and they'll say, this is not made from oil and natural gas. And I look at them and I say, you're exactly right. Paper is not made from oil and natural gas. It's pulp. It comes from a tree. You take the tree, you grind it up, you make the pulp, you make the paper. But if you'll hold that paper and you'll move it and bend it kind of with both hands and bend it and look at the sheen that is on the edge of that paper, just take a look at that sheen that's on the edge of the paper. That is a coating that's made from petroleum that is sprayed onto the paper as it's being developed so that when you run it through an inkjet or laser jet printer, the ink adheres to the paper and dries faster so that it doesn't smear when it comes out the other side. And so even that piece of paper that you have right there is made from oil and natural gas. Not to mention all the oil and gas that went into planting it, harvesting it, milling it, and all of those other things that go into making that paper as well. But even in the paper itself, there's oil and natural gas.
I want to segue into the Oilfield Christian Fellowship that is starting in Kansas that you're a part of, but I want to do that through a little bit of, I don't know if we're talking seven deadly sins or we're talking beatitudes or what we're talking about here, but
I'm not going to confess everything to you today. I'm sorry. I'm not, this is not a confessional. Right. I know that you're broadcasting this. So,
but when we're talking about, you know, the industry was silent. Mm-hmm. Some may interpret that as a little bit of arrogance that they felt they could be silent because they had such a tight relationship with the lawmakers, the policymakers, that those customers that basically used oil and natural gas didn't didn't need them to set the policy. And as long as they had the policy, we're okay. And so it's almost like there was an end around done to the industry. So while they were silent, some might interpret it as a little bit of arrogance. And that's not what I'm saying, but it almost seems like that's the attack that was taken towards the industry was more of a negative demeanor towards the industry than anything positive. Because when I think of what the oil and gas industry built, I don't think of it as negative. I do not think of it as negative at all. But that's when I think of the attack, when I think of a Greta Thunberg, or I think of AOC, or I think of a Kamala Harris and their rhetoric that is used towards the industry, I don't hear a lot of gratitude. I hear a lot of get lost. Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on that and then segue into the Christian Fellowship, because I think there's some connection there.
So I'll agree with you, and I'll say it, that yes, our industry was extremely confident and extremely arrogant that you couldn't survive without us and that everybody just knew how important we were. I think that backed a lot of it. And add to that, you go back a few decades, you have a lot fewer oil and gas companies that were out there. There's been a lot more independents that have grown up between now and then, and you had a lot more of the big oil that was driving the conversation going forward. And as we know, the oil industry is a boom and bust economy. And so you're either in a boom or you're in a bust. And there's very little in between those two things. When that boom comes, it comes with big money. There's absolutely no doubt about it. It comes with big money. But there's also substantial risk that you have when you go into that. So it makes sense. Big risk, big reward. But that really aligns us to where, what is politics really about? Politics really is about money. It's about who can generate money, who can gear money, who can drive money, who can funnel money, who can get money to the right people so that they can win certain causes. People get into office and they start making all kinds of promises about what they can do and what they can't do. Actually, they don't ever promise about what they can't do. They just promise what they can do. But they get in the office and they do that. And I think that there is a strong statement to be made for the oil and gas industry because of the money that goes with it during especially those boom times, and the ability that the industry has to be able to support political ideas, political candidates, political campaigns, those types of things, that there has been a massive effort in the oil and gas industry to try and open doors and provide a way forward for the industry through legislation. And that's vitally important. However, for a long time, the oil and gas industry has put all of their eggs in that basket, that we're going to try and do everything legislative. But we live in a country that is of the people, for the people, and by the people. And at some point, the people get to make a decision. And that's where public awareness really becomes a pivotal point for the oil and gas industry, where we're starting to make that turn and starting to put more effort into it. But we still need to make much, much more effort into reaching out to the public, because at any point in time, the public could vote our industry out of existence. Now, if they did that, they'd wake up the next morning and they'll be like, oh, man, we didn't mean to do that, when they realized what all disappeared from their life. But it is, you know as well as I do, that if you turn off the oil and gas industry, you can't just turn it back on. It takes a long time to be able to get a well going, to get a well functioning, to get it back online, to get it processed, to get refineries going. When refineries go down, it takes a long time to get them back online. So we're at that stage right now where the world cannot survive without oil and natural gas. 56% of all energy in the world is provided by oil and natural gas. You cannot survive at this point in time without oil and natural gas. But you can legislate us out of business and try. And it will be miserable for the world. It'll be miserable for the economy. But that is why it's so important for us to be out there talking with the public, helping them understand how important this resource is to their everyday lives, so that they have a better understanding of what decisions they need to make and what choices they need to make when they go into that election.
One of my favorite movies is There Will Be Blood, with Daniel Day-Lewis, and my biggest takeaway from that movie actually was how, when you brought in a faith-based environment, it really did become infectious. And this has been proven with Las Vegas when they were building the Hoover Dam as well, where all these men making money, drinking and playing poker and corralling at night, when a man of the cloth came in, it reminded them of family values. And so it was a self-regulation that happened internally. And that, to me, is one of the things that I took away from There Will Be Blood. It seems like we've gotten away from that. So talk to me about the Oilfield Christian Fellowship and what the goals and some of the deliverables are for this. Is it more than just like a Rotary Club? Is it more than just a networking group? Or is there something, you know, as a goal attached to the Christian Fellowship?
So Oilfield Christian Fellowship, of course, it did not start here in Wichita. We just have recently opened up a new chapter here in Wichita. And really, it's an acknowledgement that there are people in the oil industry that come from all different backgrounds, all different faiths, all different types of lifestyles that are a part of the oil and gas industry. But as you have said, you know, from There Will Be Blood, the oil and gas industry does have a reputation of being rowdy, carousing, lots of alcohol, lots of fun. And yes, those things happen. They happen in every, I've worked in every, as a leadership speaker, speaking for industries all across the United States. I don't know of an industry where those things don't happen. But I think that there is a value that comes from like-minded people getting together, showing that, you know, you're not alone in the industry. There are other people that have the same moral perspectives that you do, that have the same belief systems that you do, that have the same ideals that you do. And really, it's a way to encourage people in the oil and gas industry to bring those Christian values of integrity, honesty, things that a lot of times, especially in movies, the oil and gas industry is not known for, to bring those to the forefront and just recognize that there is a significant population in the oil and gas industry that holds those values and holds those truths. And so that's really what the Oilfield Christian Fellowship is for, is our mission is really to connect with other like-minded people within the industry to encourage them. Bring those values into the industry. Bring them into your job, because our industry needs that. We need that integrity. We need that morality. We need that honesty to be able to be brought into our industry.
How's it going at the Kansas State Fair? Are people excited to see oil and gas industry Kansas strong? You guys are a little bit different because night was a 95% or independents versus, you know, some of the other states that are, you know, maybe it's 80%. I forget the number off the top of my head, but it's, my guess is that, you know, it would be almost like a farming community because there's so many smaller companies and independents. Talk to me about the public perception in Kansas right now.
Yeah, so Kansas, we do have the largest conglomeration of independent oil and gas producers of any region in the world. You know, here in our state, we have almost 2,000 independent producers that are in the state.
Wow.
We only have one company that could even really be considered a major that's doing actual production. We have lots of pipelines, refineries, those types of things. But on the production side of it, we only have really one major company that's doing any significant production in the state. So we are a community of independent oil and gas producers. 89 out of the 105 counties here in Kansas produce oil and natural gas. And so it's pretty widespread across the state. And so what that means for us here in Kansas, especially since Kansas is a red state, so we have a lot higher favorability than some of the other states that oil and gas is being produced in. So we do have a vast majority of people that come by our booth are very supportive of the oil and gas industry. They want to know what we do, how we do it, why we do it. They want to know that information. They want questions answered about what that pumping unit out in the field is actually doing. Why is it not running? You know, and we answer all of those questions. But we do get questions where people come by and say, thank you for all the earthquakes, or thanks for destroying the planet. And those are the conversations I love. Those are the conversations I live for here at the State Fair, because that's where we're able to kind of really break it down and say, why do you think that? Why do you think that the oil and gas industry is responsible for all the earthquakes here in Kansas? Why do you think that we are destroying the earth? And when we're able to ask those questions, then we're able to really kind of begin a conversation where most of the time it turns into a very positive conversation where people acknowledge, I didn't have the slightest clue what I was talking about. I just took the talking points that I got from media and hurled them at you. And that's why we come to the State Fair. We come to the State Fair every year is because we want to have those conversations. And we can sit there at the State Fair. We have a number of volunteers, and we can sit there and we can talk with you until all your questions are answered. And it's really a positive opportunity for the oil and gas industry here in Kansas.
One of the things I loved going to the high schools and the elementary schools and the junior highs were those questions of opposition. Because for me, I was a part of that group. I came from agriculture on the opposite side of the state from where all the oil production was. I literally lived 7 hours from the nearest oil and gas well. So out of sight, out of mind, all we got was the negative type of news. Well, when I started the crude life here, we actually were going to be an investigative against the industry when I first started, because that was what I thought the free market wanted. That was what I thought could actually make some money, et cetera. But I'm a method journalist. I'm like Daniel Day-Lewis of an actor, right? I'm a method actor. So before I write an article on skydiving, I'm going to go skydive, right? Because I want to make sure I understand what I'm writing. So I went and I spent a month out in the oil field, living in my vehicle, living in, experiencing everything they live. And I got such a respect for that industry that now we're on our going on our 13th year of Positive Petroleum, because I see all the different, I think I've even read 98% of everything that we touch as part of a oil and gas industry. You know, I said 95, but I've seen reports all the way up to 98%. And it's unbelievable when you can talk about your personal experience, how, listen, I know where you're coming from, but you should see what they're doing on the recycled waterfront. You should see how they're helping emergency responders. You should see the checks that are written out to rural firefighters so they can have new upgrade in their equipment that they're mandated to have, that nobody is caring about some volunteer fire department. There was so many positives that came out of the oil and gas industry. And being in Kansas, you might appreciate this, that the agriculture industry, it has problems. It's not as safe as people think it is. And there are some issues, but at the end of the day, the net positive is so positive that you just kind of have to accept reality. And it's hard for the average person to do that when they want to live in a perfect world, when they want to live in the planet of platitudes, if you will. I live in the realm of reality, and I got a big respect for the oil and gas industry. So that is what I like sharing with the kids when they start asking me about all the deer that are dying because of fracking and the earthquakes and all these other things that get exaggerated in the media. How did that happen, by the way, in the media? You know, the oil and gas industry, they do write a lot of big checks to the rural fire departments, and they do take care of a lot of local communities. And when I see how, you know, the media has kind of changed a little bit, you know, we kind of joked, the former mayor of Bismarck and I one day organically on the radio, that when you take a look at science, politics has ruined science, where we can't even agree on what a man or a woman is anymore. So politics has ruined science. You take a look at the economy, boy, politics has really kind of destroyed the economy a little bit too, because now so many companies are reliant on government subsidies or economic development or whatever kind of grant they need. I think politics has ruined politics. I remember when we could have a civilized conversation about left and right issues without getting in fights. Now it's really difficult. I mean, when I take a look at how many things politics has really ruined, I do think politics has really caused a problem with the energy industry and the agriculture industry. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with you. I think that, you know, once something becomes a political issue, science, logic, reason, rationale is all out the window. It's just about winning and losing. It's about winning and losing. And, you know, when you talk about how did we get here with the news, that's pretty simple. Just think about your own casual conversation. When you're having a casual conversation with a loved one and you want to tell them, hey, I've got some news I need to share with you. If it's positive news, you always say, I've got some news I want to share with you. It's positive. You always add that on to the end. Why? Because news has become, it's become associated with negative. It's become associated with problems. It's become associated with those. And so the vast majority of news reporting, that's all it is. Here are the problems. Here's where things are falling apart. Here's what's going wrong here. That's what the news is. The news by nature is negative. Occasionally they'll throw in a positive piece in there to try and balance it out a little bit to make it look like they're not just the naysayers all the time. But the vast majority of news is negative. So all the stories you're talking about the positives of the oil and gas industry, no one ever reports on those. No one ever talks about those because those aren't news. Those are for the positive stories. And when it comes to did this oil company provide uniforms for the volunteer fire department, or that's one story over here. We have another positive story over here where this kid saved this cat from a tree. Which one are we going to give press to? Let's give it to the kid with the cat. And so, you know, that's the role that we're in. That's where we're at. That's why it's incumbent upon our own industry to take that upon ourselves. And so here in Kansas, when, you know, the vast majority of us are independent oil and gas producers, the average company here in Kansas only has 3 employees. The average oil company only has 3 employees. So they don't have a PR department. They don't have a promotions department. And that's where Kansas Strong is so vital in helping to get those stories out, helping to get that positive message out there, because the news media is not going to report on it. It's not news to them.
You know who my favorite interviews are? Is the emergency management directors from each county. I was floored at how much the energy, specifically the oil and gas industry, kept those emergency management people around, because, again, this is where politics, you have some bureaucrat, whether it's in Topeka or whether it's in Bismarck or Washington, D.C., or Austin, Texas, they're making decisions that are blanket. And all of a sudden, these firefighters, which 65% of firefighters are volunteer still, they have to upgrade their electrical equipment. They have to upgrade their communication equipment. These are mandates that they have to upgrade that they can't afford $185,000 for 4 walkie-talkies. That's incredible. And so, you know, here's oil company A or B writing the check out, and primarily because I'm sure that they're being used a lot for those different industries. However, that is, to me, taking on responsibility that you could just pass on to the taxpayer, because at the end of the day, the taxpayer is going to have to foot that bill. That's another example to me that really made the oil and gas industry a positive for me, was how they were the ones that the emergency management directors, they were speaking very positive about. I mean, the one gal in Dunn County, North Dakota, I bet she, for like 5 minutes straight, she rattled off, oil company A gave us this much for this equipment, went up and down the line, like I said, from walkie-talkies to scuba self-breathing apparatuses to carbon monoxide detectors to all kinds of different things. How does that work in Kansas? With all these smaller companies, I can't imagine that they're able to write big checks out to a lot of these different organizations, can they? I mean, that's tough. That's
you would be wrong on that account. And in fact, you can go into any area of Kansas, even places where we don't produce oil and gas. Look at any of the nonprofits that are out there. Look at the art centers. Look at the exploration centers. Look at the discovery centers. Look at the theaters, and go look at the roles of the donors that have made the donations to keep those things going, to keep those things moving forward. You will always find oil and gas people that are up there. Here in Kansas, it's a little different because they don't put the name of their company up there. They just put their name up there humbly as a donor. And so, you know, if you don't know they're in the oil and gas industry, you don't know that was an oil and gas donation.
Sure.
And a lot of it is personal donations take place. A lot of the private schools around here are funded by the oil and gas industry. And so the oil and gas industry has given a tremendous amount to the people of Kansas that a lot of people in Kansas don't even know about. Unlike other industries that have PR departments that say, hey, we gave $10,000 to so-and-so to do this project. The oil and gas industry gives that money without any recognition, without any, here in Kansas, they give it without any recognition, without any notoriety for the vast majority of the time. And so you don't hear a lot of that. But again, it goes back to those stories. I'll give you an example about how the news reports. One of the ways that the news reports, a couple years ago, we had an oil spill, a pipeline here in Kansas that leaked. And I think you and I talked, that's kind of when we got connected, was when that oil pipeline leak took place. And then the pipeline company came in, the oil companies came in, they cleaned it up, they remediated it. They did an amazing job getting it back to normal, to where it's back to normal function, normal land, took care of all of the issues. But what was interesting is there were 23 stories about the oil spill to every one story that was shared about the cleanup. News just does not they do not report on the positive side of it. They report on the negative. And that's the uphill battle. And that's why, again, I advocate our industry has to take it upon ourselves to go to the public directly. The media is not going to do it for us. Politicians can only do so much. Eventually, we have to talk to the people and we have to take the message directly to the people that this is why it's so vital to your life and the lifestyle that you live.
Let's talk a little bit about a different form of the media. Let's talk about some oil and gas popular culture. We mentioned Giant. We mentioned Dallas, the Beverly Hillbillies. There's a number of different oil and gas movies throughout the decades. There Will Be Blood is another one that comes to mind. And a lot of them over the past couple, 20 years have not been the most positive. And that's interesting because movies are generally supposed to have a positive message at the end of the day. And so when I think of Friday Night Lights, which was, I think, a 1988 Odessa Permian High School true story, at least a book written on, kind of true, I guess, story, if you will, about the coach and the players within that high school football team, which it's a big deal down there. It's a huge deal. I mean, you can put 20, 30,000, 50,000 people in that arena or that football stadium, right? So, and it won all kinds of different awards and a number of different things. Billy Bob Thornton was the lead on it. What was your takeaway? What is your movie review, if you will, when it comes to Friday Night Lights, the movie?
Yeah. So when it comes to the oil and gas industry, I'm gonna kind of come from that perspective a little bit. There's a lot of things that people don't understand about that movie that made it, because a lot of people, they come away with it that football was so big in Texas that you have this Friday Night Lights. And it was really much bigger than that because it was more about how big the oil and gas industry was in Texas at that time and still is to this day, but especially at that point in time. You're talking about the late 80s, just coming off of an oil boom right before another oil bust that took place. So working in Midland and Odessa, as I have for years, running a camp down there every single year, Midland and Odessa is oil central. And football is important all over Texas. It's important all over the South. But what made Odessa Permian so unique, and what it made it unique, was the oil and gas money that was flowing around Odessa at that point in time. And if you actually watch that movie, what you actually see is because you had a bunch of people that were flush in oil and gas money, they were able to have significant influence in trying to recruit, trying to retain, supporting booster clubs, those types of things. Many of those things that the high schools and the colleges have tried to get out of sports, where you can't buy these players. You can't look at that movie and not understand that and really understand what's going on, because it really was about this idea that if you have money, you have power, you have influence. Therefore, if you love football, you have the right to influence that game. And that's really the crutch that movie was built upon. And it seems a little disjointed from us today, but it's right where we're at, where we are today, because we're having those same conversations, except for now it's not the NIL. Now it's not the oil and gas industry. Through the NIL, it's every industry now that can support their school, support their, just like they were in the 80s that made that movie such an epic movie. That's the college situation that we're in right now, where money is flowing, people are getting paid, and really it comes down to how much money can your college raise to be able to compete with the other colleges around it through NIL. And so it's really a timely parallel between where we are now compared to where we are in the 80s. And really, do we want to go back to that point in time compared to where we are now? But that's my first take on it.
So when I looked at the movie, when I saw it, I always look at it from two different perspectives. One is, okay, how is the mainstream person going to digest this? But I did go to school for the media, and part of that, I took film classes. I actually went out to California for a year to study film. So like I said, pretty much every book and every movie is supposed to have a story arc. So you're supposed to have, you know, your drama, but at the end of the day, end of the movie, you are supposed to have something uplifting, unless you have a cliffhanger that's going to bring you to the next, you know, popcorn or ticket buying movie. And what this movie represented to me was how you had this desolate town where nothing can grow and nobody is going to go there to live because it's the middle of the desert. Well, they found opportunity there. That opportunity happened to be oil and gas. And with that oil and gas came quality of life. Well, when you have too good of quality of life, well, then you start getting into your social problems. You start getting in your influence and bashing and all these different things. And then the quarterback or the running back or the quarterback goes down. I think it was the running back goes down, right? So now you got influencing, trying to influence each other. So now you have even more drama on top of the drama. But in the end, this new coach instills hope and honor and self-respect into the town and into the people. To me, that's what that movie was about. It was about how hope and how honor can really lift up a community after they were lifted up already. And so that's how I looked at that, is from more of a hope and honor. You probably don't hear that too often at Friday Night Lights, but again, no, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll agree with you heartily, because my second point that I had, my second takeaway that I took from the movie was very similar to what you just said right there. And that's that the coach really kind of represents where the oil and gas industry is right now. I mean, if you watch that movie and you watch what happens throughout that movie, you got kind of two different sides tugging at it. On the one side, you have a bunch of juveniles that don't always do the right thing and do stupid stuff. And on the other side, you have hugely influential, politically motivated people that are trying to make the coach do what they want him to do. And the coach has to walk that middle ground between the two, where he brings the kids along to where he wants him to, where he wants them to go. And he deals with the political adversity that's there without caving into the political adversity to get the team where it needs to be. That's where we are in the oil and gas industry. We put ourselves there by remaining silent for as long as we've remained silent about the political issues when it comes to environmentalism. But on the one side, we have, and I don't mean this in a mean way, I just mean it from the pure definition of it. We have an ignorant public that really doesn't understand the oil and gas industry, doesn't understand what it is, how we use it, how it impacts our life. And on the other side, we have huge political concerns that are trying to force us and push us to make us become something that we don't need to become. And our job in the middle as a free market industry, right in the middle of it, because going back to what you said earlier in the show, unlike other energy industries, we actually have to provide for all of our assets ourselves. Anything we want to add, anything we want to build, anything we want to create, we have to pay for it ourselves. There are no subsidies out there to help us do it. And so we're walking that free market middle ground where we have to spend our time, which the oil and gas industry spends a lot of time, dealing with the political front and taking care of the political issue. But we need to spend more of that time working with those juveniles that don't really understand the industry and help them understand how important this is to their life.
Should mention the brand new series Landmen debuts in November. The trailer just was released yesterday. We have it at the Crude Life. That also stars Billy Bob Thornton. John Hamm is going to be in it as well. Demi Moore. Ali Laird is in it. I mean, there's quite the cast in it. And my understanding is it's based on Boomtown, which was a Texas Tribune 9-part, 10-part series or something like that. They tried to do a Don Johnson spitoff, Blood and Oil, that I think made it 1 or 2 episodes or something. So I look forward to our review on Landmen when that comes out on Paramount Plus. Mr. Warren Martin with Kansas Strong. Any final thoughts? Are you guys supporting the college football this year?
We are. We support several of the college teams that are here in Kansas. Of course, K-State, KU, WSU. Well, WSU doesn't have a football program, but we support their girls, ladies volleyball basketball, and so we support most of the colleges that are here in town through sponsorships as a way to kind of get in front of the public. Really cool one that we're doing this year with the University of Kansas is we have a Touchdown for Teachers program. So any teacher in the state of Kansas can go onto their social media, sign up for Touchdowns for Teachers, and they enter into a drawing. So every time that the University of Kansas scores a touchdown, we put $100 into a kitty. And last year, I believe it was $5,900 that we gave to a teacher. So all the teachers that sign up, we draw one of them out of the hat, and we gave it to a teacher last year who was a shop teacher that taught shop and mechanics. And they used the money to build a hovercraft as a school project. And so they built a hovercraft with that $5,900. So any Kansas teachers right now, you can go to the University of Kansas social media, athletics, social media, sign up, put your name in the hat. You might be drawn out and get a chance to win some money to use in your classroom any way that you want. It's completely untagged. You're able to use it the way you want to use it in the classroom, but it's just a way to kind of give back to education.
Well, we appreciate the time today. Any final thoughts that you want to leave people with? You know, like you're doing some work at the state fair. You're doing a lot of interviews around the area. Just kind of final thoughts as we end summer. I was reminded today, even though school started, summer's not until September 21st or 22nd. So as we get done with summer and enter into the fall, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think my final thoughts are we're here for the next 10 days at the State Fair. If you're in Kansas, come by and see us. We'd love to see you and talk with you. If you're not here in Kansas and you're in some other state wondering what in the world we're doing at the State Fair, I would encourage you to consider going to your own State Fair, finding a way to get our industry into every State Fair. It's a great place to be because it's very agriculturally centered. And in the oil and gas industry, agriculture is a huge part of our industry to be able to get the land leases that we need. And so it's a great place to connect with people that kind of have somewhat of an open mind to what we do and are able to understand how we do it if we're able. But we have to get in front of them to communicate with them. If we don't get in front of them and communicate with them, then we eventually are going to be the ones that lose. It's incumbent upon us to make that effort, to get in front of people, to be our own advocates and advocate for the oil and gas industry. And if you want to reach out to me, go to kansasstrong.com. Love to hear from you.